According to an America-based think tank report released last week, the Israeli regime has killed 232 journalists and media workers since its genocidal war in Gaza in early October 2023. Abu Bakr Abed joined us earlier with more details on the latest Israeli attacks against the devastated Palestinian territory. Let's take a listen.
Because the shelling hasn't stopped, the firing hasn't stopped. Even as I'm talking to you right now, the artillery shelling that I can hear from the eastern outskirts is absolutely horrendous and something that absolutely frightens the entire population in Deir el-Balah. And of course, there have been loads of attacks, airstrikes on Deir el-Balah, and the latest was in the southern areas on a family home that killed six people, including two women, and four men. And many injuries were also taken here to the hospital to receive a treatment. And overnight strikes have targeted Al-Aqsa Hospital, where three people were wounded and were receiving treatment here inside the hospital. And in another attack, which was in Al-Basra area in the central part, two people were killed, a husband and his wife, and their sons and children were also wounded. Now, if we talk about the southern areas, particularly the southernmost part of the strip, if we had a look at the evacuation orders, now the entire Rafah city is a buffer zone, so there is no zone for the population at the moment. All of Rafah is under the full Israeli control, and it's a buffer zone, so people do have a shrinking humanitarian zone, which is of course not a humanitarian and not safe zone at all, because Israel has been targeting very repeatedly over time.
The Palestinian Red Crescent Society has called for an independent international investigation to the targeted killing of 15 medics in Gaza.
We, as the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, call on the world first to form an independent and impartial international commission of inquiry. We have also asked this of the Security Council into the circumstances of the deliberate killing of ambulance crews and to hold those responsible for these flagrant violations of international humanitarian law accountable.
Speaking at a press conference in Ramallah, PRCS President Yunus Al-Khatib demanded punishment for Israeli crimes and said merely speaking of international law in the Geneva Convention is not sufficient. He also asked Israel to clarify the fate of the PRCS missing staff. Meanwhile, Germany has also called for an urgent inquiry into the attack, questioning the actions of the Israeli army. The March 23rd attack killed at least 15 Palestinian medics when Israeli forces knowingly opened fire on a convoy of ambulances in Rafah. Well, thousands of anti-Israel protesters in Turkey have thronged the streets of Istanbul, joining the growing wave of demonstrations worldwide against the regime's renewed onslaught against the Gaza Strip.
It is heavy for me to say these words, because we can only be spectators, unfortunately. Our prayers are with them. We have been boycotting for years individually. We are here. We are very much with them. However, now I want our state and Muslims to rise up on this issue. I want Israel to be told to stop militarily and to be put in their place.
Demonstrators waved Palestinian flags and held posters and banners in support of Palestine and Palestinian resistance groups. They also chanted anti-Israel slogans and called for an immediate end to the Israeli genocide in the besieged territory. The new rallies come amid a rise in global demonstrations against the resumption of Israel's onslaught after it shattered a two-month ceasefire with Hamas in mid-March. In the latest such protests in Morocco, thousands have marched the streets of the capital Rabat in solidarity with Palestinians in one of the country's largest demonstrations in months. Similar protests have also been held in Libya, Lebanon, Japan, and France.
Their voices filled with frustration and outrage, protesters once again hit the streets of Paris Sunday. They expressed their dismay at the relentless horrors being inflicted by Israel's military on the besieged Gaza Strip. One woman mourned what she called the murder of thousands of children in Gaza by trailing a long sheet of paper with the names of just some of those youngsters killed by the regime's forces. In recent weeks, hundreds more Palestinians have been killed in Israel's renewed bombing and shelling campaign in northern Gaza, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Another indication say some Israel is acting with impunity.
I'm just so disappointed about that, and that's why we are in this place every week and since a long time, you know, because I just don't know, you know, our president is really complicit of this genocide and is really in a, I don't know the word, but very, very close to Israel, and I don't understand that.
In a now notorious incident, Israeli forces killed 15 medics and aid workers, with a new video emerged showing their deliberate execution, as the victims were wearing highly reflective uniforms and were aboard clearly marked Red Crescent's ambulances on March 23rd. The video contradicts Israeli army claims that the vehicles were fired upon as they advanced suspiciously towards troops without headlights or emergency signals.
I can't imagine how we could believe anything coming from the Israelis, especially from the IDF. These people have been calling the children Hamas for a year and a half now. So what really surprised me is that some medias are still talking about alleged or probably or maybe or things like that. This is what's shocking. It's not shocking that they have killed some humanitarian workers and assassinated them.
The evidence showing execution-style killings was retrieved from a phone belonging to one of the victims, who was buried by Israeli forces in a mass grave.
Israel has once again warned residents to evacuate large areas of the territory ahead of further military action. Demonstrators here are asking where Gaza civilians, who are bearing the brunt of the conflict, can seek shelter or safety. Peter Hume, Paris.
Israeli forces have intensified their incursions into the occupied West Bank, including Ramallah. Meanwhile, Palestinians have organized a general strike in response to the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. We were earlier joined by our correspondent, Naqal Hamad, for more details on the latest developments.
Since the hours of the morning, no economical situation, educational, health, everything over here has been closed to send a clear message to oppose what's happening in the Palestinian territories in general, and specifically to Gaza, what's happening to Gaza Strip, the unprecedented aggression, the crimes that are being committed. At 2 hours of the night, the IOF raided the entire Ramallah Providen, the most of the refugee camps over here, intensified attacks upon Al-Jalazon camp, Al-Amari camp, and to the north of the occupied Al-Quds, Qalandia and Shafat also were raided. And until minutes ago, the IOF started withdrawing from Ramallah and from those refugee camps, performing detainment operations, arresting many Palestinians, terrorizing families, and of course making incursions towards homes and houses, demolishing and destroying houses and properties.
Well, as the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza is raging, people in the occupied West Bank and occupied Al-Quds have held a general strike in support of Palestinian civilians in the besieged Strip. Here are some people calling for a united global stance against the ongoing aggression in Gaza.
Today in Hebron is a general strike in solidarity with Gaza. May God have mercy on our martyrs and release our prisoners, and may God be with them. Honestly, all the Arab people and the world should stand together as one. We see sights of children that are unspeakable. We can only say, God is sufficient for us, and He is the best disposer of affairs. People today continue, and God willing will continue with the strike because the situation is difficult. May God be with the people. Today is a strike in support of our brothers in Gaza. But do you think Israel will actually stop the siege on Gaza? May God be with Palestinians. All the Arab people are supporting Israel while Gaza is being annihilated, and no one cares.
The Israeli Prime Minister has arrived in the U.S. after his plane was made to travel a longer distance to avoid countries that might enforce the International Criminal Court's arrest warrant against him. According to media reports, the airplane carrying Netanyahu from Hungary to the U.S. flew 400 extra kilometers in distance. The regime fears that countries such as Ireland, Iceland, and the Netherlands might enforce the ICC mandate. Netanyahu was in Hungary on an official state visit after Budapest announced it would withdraw from the ICC and the Rome Statute. In November last year, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Netanyahu and his former Minister of Military Affairs over the regime's war crimes in Gaza. Anti-Netanyahu protesters take to the streets in El Quds, calling on the Israeli Prime Minister to secure the release of captives held in Gaza. The protesters gathered outside the Israeli Premier's residence, slamming the regime's inability to secure the return of their captives, despite repeated promises. The demonstration came just hours before Prime Minister Netanyahu's scheduled meeting with former U.S. President Donald Trump in Washington, D.C. Public frustration is mounting as the Israeli regime faces deepening internal dissent and growing international scrutiny. Last month, Tel Aviv unilaterally ended the ceasefire agreement with Hamas, launching a brutal assault on Gaza after international attempts to extend the truce were rejected. An Israeli airstrike has killed at least one person in Lebanon as the regime continues to violate a fragile ceasefire with the Arab country. The Lebanese Health Ministry has said a man was killed after regime airstrike targeted a village in the south of the country. This brings the number of Lebanese killed in Israeli attacks since the ceasefire to 84. Over the past 24 hours, the Israeli regime has attacked several villages in Lebanon's south, including Ziklin, Naoura, and Ait Shaab. Since the ceasefire agreement with Lebanon came into effect in November 2024, Israel has repeatedly violated the deal. The regime has defied all calls to adhere to its obligations under the agreement, including the withdrawal of its forces from southern Lebanon. Residential areas in Yemen continue to be targeted by American warplanes as the United States presses ahead with its aggression against the Arab country. According to Yemeni media, the country's capital city of Sana'a has been the focal point of fresh U.S. attacks. At least three airstrikes targeted al-Jabal al-Aswad area in Sana'a governance. The attacks left four civilians dead and over two dozen wounded, including women and children. American warplanes also launched four airstrikes on Kamaran Island in the governance of Hodeida in western Yemen. The northwestern Saada governance was rocked with three strikes, while several air raids hit Hajja governance Abis district. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israel operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Most of the U.S. attacks are targeting civilian buildings, causing casualties among the civilian population. Well, Press TV has spoken to people in Yemen for their opinion about the American aggression on their country. Let's take a listen to what they had to say.
These are the goals of the criminal and liar Trump, who targets civilians and residential neighborhoods. Today in Shaab District, a citizen's home was bombed and several members of his family were killed, including women and children. What was bombed were not military sites, not missiles, and not launch pads. We say to the criminal Trump, this has been your pattern since the beginning of the aggression against our country and our people. All your targets are civilian and residential, but you will not deter us from our stance in support of Gaza, even if we are wiped off the face of the earth.
We were talking with Sheikh Saleh when suddenly we heard the first airstrike. I tried to run, but the second missile hit and exploded. That's when I heard Sheikh Saleh screaming, "My children are dead," and after that, I lost consciousness.
Iran's president has stressed again that the Islamic Republic doesn't want war. He said Tehran does favor negotiations, but not at any cost. Masoud Pezeshkian says Iran wants to negotiate, but the U.S. needs to prove that it truly intends to negotiate as well. He added that Washington cannot threaten Iran every day while calling for negotiations at the same time. Pezeshkian stressed that Iran will not submit to any humiliation. Meanwhile, Foreign Ministry spokesman Ismail Begai says the U.S. is yet to respond to Iran's proposal for indirect talks on its nuclear program and sanctions removal. Begai once again reiterated that Tehran will under no circumstances seek nuclear weapons as instructed by Islam. China has accused the U.S. of unilateralism and economic bullying as President Donald Trump's tariffs continue to spark global trade tensions.
The U.S. is practicing hegemony in the name of reciprocity. It sacrifices the legitimate interests of other countries to serve its own self-interests. Putting the U.S. first over international rules is a typical act of unilateralism, protectionism, and economic bullying.
Lin Jian added the U.S. tariffs seriously undermine the normal international economic and trade order and harm the security and stability of the global supply chain. The remarks come as Trump's sweeping tariffs have been sending ripples through global finance sector, with many major indices experiencing the sharpest decline in years. Beijing stock markets on Monday took a nosedive after China responded to the U.S. tariffs with more levies on U.S. imports. The German stock index DAX also slumped by around 10% at the start of trading. Meanwhile, France has urged the EU to consider, quote, extremely aggressive trade responses to Washington. Well, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
By facilitating the wave of airstrikes, arming and funding the Zionist regime, just like his predecessor Joe Biden, Donald Trump has once again proven that he is indeed a warmonger. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, the sheer intensity of missile strikes and deadly bombings across the besieged Gaza Strip not only marked the settler colonial regime's continuation of the genocide of Palestinians, but also a decisive rejection of the ceasefire it had agreed to go. The child-murdering regime's criminal leadership, particularly Benjamin Netanyahu, who is on the International Criminal Court's wanted list, has sought every pretext under the sun to resume massacring innocent civilians in Gaza. Despite the so-called lull during the first phase of the ceasefire, the Israeli regime had been itching to shed more Palestinian blood, adding to the tens of thousands of martyrs since October 7, 2023. Overnight, while displaced Palestinians subjected to the Zionist regime's inhumane blockade of food, fuel, medication, and other essentials, were preparing suhoor meals in makeshift plastic tents and bombed-out buildings during Ramadan, Netanyahu unleashed another wave of terror upon them. Within minutes, more than 400 civilians were killed, mainly women and children. Over 1,000 more were injured, with no means for medical treatment. Reports indicate that the current military strikes are deadlier and broader in scale than the ongoing drone attacks Gaza has suffered, while Netanyahu repeatedly violated the original ceasefire terms. In response to this aggression, the Gaza-based resistance movement, the Palestinian Resistance Movement of Hamas, condemned the Zionist regime for disregarding its obligations and overturning the truce agreement. Israel, which has repeatedly violated the ceasefire that took effect on January 19th, sought to fabricate new terms to justify blowing up the deal entirely. Journalist Jeremy Shill of Drop News and Abu Bakr Abed of Press TV noted that since January, Netanyahu had waged a campaign of sabotage and provocation, openly violating the agreement by obstructing and outright blocking aid deliveries into the Gaza Strip. Although food and other supplies were permitted during the first 42-day phase of the deal, the Zionist regime refused to allow nearly all 60,000 mobile homes and admitted only a fraction of the 200,000 tents into Gaza. While Netanyahu has attempted to blame Hamas with fabricated charges of undermining the ceasefire, the reality is that the Israeli regime imposed a total blockade on any aid, including food and medical supplies, to the Strip, and resumed its policy of using starvation as a weapon of war. Recently, the Israeli regime also cut off Gaza's electricity supply, forcing a major desalination plant to drastically reduce water output, severely limiting drinking water for 600,000 people in Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis. Hamas has remained committed to the agreement and was eager to maintain it, but Netanyahu, looking for a way out of his internal crisis, preferred to reignite the war at the expense of the blood of our people, Hamas stated. According to Haaretz, Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani demanded immediate international action to force Israel to implement a ceasefire, abide by the agreement, and return to negotiations. That a key mediator is directing demands solely at Israel confirms that, contrary to Netanyahu's claims, Hamas has not violated the agreement. The other side has. This is further reinforced by media reports that families of Israeli captives in Gaza have denounced their own regime, not Hamas. Indeed, Netanyahu's right-wing terror thugs Itamar Ben-Gavir and Bezalel Smotrich not only welcomed the renewal of scorched-earth policies, but gleefully admitted the plans were prepared weeks ago. Ben-Gavir is now set to rejoin the cabinet. Their excitement over the slaughter of innocent mothers and babies reveals more than mere approval. It confirms that Israel never intended to honor the agreement and deliberately plotted to blame Hamas as a pretext for ongoing savagery in Gaza. Since the ceasefire began 60 days ago, the Palestinian resistance and rights organizations have meticulously tracked Israel's repeated violations, as reported by the Palestinian prisoner network Samedun. At the same time, in order to protect their people, the resistance has not once violated the ceasefire agreements nor retaliated against the Zionist war criminals. Izzat Ar-Reshir, a founding member of Hamas Political Bureau, reacted, stating, "The enemy will not achieve through war and destruction what it has failed to achieve through negotiations." Trump's greenlighting of Israel's bloodbath makes him directly culpable for a series of war crimes, including genocide and ethnic cleansing. By facilitating the wave of airstrikes, arming and funding the Zionist regime, just like his predecessor Joe Biden, Donald Trump has once again proven that he is indeed a warmonger. Israeli activist Alon Mizrahi captured the devastation of this renewed genocide, immediately followed by harrowing images, as a tsunami of shock, disbelief, and pain. He put it in these words, quote, "Let's allow these feelings to crystallize into even a stronger resolution and conviction," unquote.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge with Sheikh Mukhtar on IRIB English Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the 185th sermon, and this is one of those areas where Imam Ali alayhi salam tries to draw our attention towards an important issue that can face the society, and that is to be engrossed in blessings and become forgetful about the duties that are necessary to be executed by each and every member of the community. And once these blessings become many, they can lead to certain side effects. So a community needs to be prepared on how to deal with these kinds of blessings. How should a person, prepare himself and the society to combat these difficulties? So those difficulties are that a society now, because of those difficulties that come due to extra blessings and not being able to kind of plan for those blessings in the right way, lead to backtracking of the society sometimes and can be very dangerous. Inshallah, we shall discuss about what are those difficulties that a community can face.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, if you remember in the previous session, we talked about the fact that when the blessings become too much, the material forms of blessings, when they are multitudinous, then one of the dangers is that we can have a society which is divided, whereby the rich become richer and the poor remain to be poor, and sometimes even become poorer. Why? Especially this happens when the wealth is not distributed well, and there is no proper planning and organization in place to be able to do that. So firstly, this has to be given very much attention to. But sometimes, even if these systems are in place, people do not abide by the law, and they become corrupt, and they, you know, tend to bypass all of these systems to achieve their material objectives. So this is a problem that can be faced, and these are the things that actually lead to the backtracking of the society, and the society sees that, for example, their aims are not being achieved because of the fact that now people are more focused on enjoying life, on just spending without any proper order, and therefore, you know, this society ends up to be just a materialistic society in the rights, if you want to say, and it can have other effects in the future. And we've seen that happening to the societies in the past also. When the communities become affluent, then they become forgetful of God, and then they become forgetful of what they need to achieve as servants of God. Now, apart from that, there's also another effect that can affect the society, and that is that people themselves can become spoilt. They can suffer spiritual harm. Inshallah, we shall discuss about this in the coming segment.
Sayyid Razi, also known as Sharif Razi, a religious scholar and theologian, holds a significant place in Islamic history for his invaluable contribution to the compilation of Imam Ali's profound teachings and speeches, which were later compiled into the influential literary work known as Nahjul Balagha.
Now, it is completely natural that people, when they see a lot of wealth, they kind of get excited about that wealth. They want to spend it in different ways, and they want to just achieve an affluent life. I mean, this is something that people normally dream about. And this is, we need to be realistic. Many people, unfortunately, in the world, they are materialistic in their mindset. I'm not saying most people, but many have that idea. But they should realize, firstly, that primarily it is not wrong to think about material progress. And even if a person likes it, likes the glitter, liking it by itself is not bad. Being attached to it and not being focused on spirituality because of these things is what is not encouraged. So therefore, a person should ask himself sincerely that why does he want or she want to achieve this material affluence? Now, many times when communities and people face these material blessings, they dive into them. And when suddenly their material, their material wealth and their material state becomes vast, they forget other things. They get so engrossed. Al-mal wal-banun zinatul hayat dunya. Because wealth and children are the beauty of this world, right? And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made it as a test for us, you know. زَيَّنَّا مَا عَلَى الْأَرْضِ. We have made beautiful that which is on top of the earth. We have made it look beautiful, rather. زَيَّنَّا. It looks beautiful. And then he says, إِنَّا جَعَلْنَا ma'ala al-ardi zinatan laha. We have made that which is on top of the earth a beauty for the earth. Linabluakum, so that we can test you. You see? So these are some things that we need to keep in mind, that if we take these as a test, then inshallah we can overcome and we can easily be able to balance our lives in a way that we can also achieve our spiritual goals. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar in the program Gate of Knowledge on RIB English Radio.
بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى وفي المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
The International Court of Justice has already established that there is a case for genocide in Gaza. Both the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary have a duty to the UK to accept the ICJ's findings and publicly acknowledge the genocide being committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza. Formal acknowledgement of the ICJ's ruling of genocide would have serious and immediate consequences for the UK's dealings with the Israeli regime. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, during a parliamentary debate in November last year, independent lawmaker Ayub Khan reminded British Prime Minister Keir Starmer that genocide was defined by Article 2 of the UN Genocide Convention and asked him what his definition of genocide was. Starmer replied that he was well aware of the definition of genocide, and that is why I have never described this or referred to it as genocide. In December 2023, South Africa filed a case against the Zionist regime at the International Court of Justice, accusing the Zionist regime of committing genocide in Gaza as defined by Article 2 of the Genocide Convention. Article 2 lists acts that constitute genocide, including the intentional destruction of a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group through acts such as killing, inflicting harm, and creating destructive conditions. On January 26, 2024, the ICJ concluded in a parliamentary finding that Israel's actions in Gaza constituted genocide and agreed to hear South Africa's case. Britain is a signatory to the ICJ and has made a declaration accepting its compulsory jurisdiction. Despite the ICJ's preliminary finding and even more damning, a recent UN report confirming that Israel's actions in Gaza are consistent with the characteristics of genocide, Starmer has continued to refuse to label Israel's actions in Gaza as genocide. This refusal to acknowledge the findings of both the ICJ and the UN underscores Starmer's ongoing reluctance to confront the scale of the atrocities being committed. Similarly, UK Foreign Secretary David Lammy last year also made the claim in Parliament that no genocide was occurring in Gaza because not enough people had died, he claimed. In his response to Conservative lawmaker Nick Timothy's request that the Foreign Secretary take this opportunity to say that there is not a genocide occurring in the Middle East, Lammy said that, I agree with the Honourable Gentleman that those terms were largely used when millions of people lost their lives in crises such as Rwanda and the Second World War. The way that people are now using those terms undermines their seriousness. However, both men have used the word genocide for other areas of the world involving far less deaths than in Gaza. To claim that genocide is not occurring in Gaza ultimately serves to benefit the child killer regime of Israel. Such denial deflects international scrutiny and shields Israel from legal consequences on the global stage, protecting its military and political interests. However, Starmer and Lammy's approach does not fundamentally change the UK's commitments under domestic law. For example, denying Israel's genocide has no bearing on the UK's strategic export licensing criteria, which governs military exports. These criteria do not require a determination of genocide to restrict arms sales, but instead focus on violations of international humanitarian law, a far lower threshold. Similarly, war crimes and crimes against humanity are punishable under UK domestic law regardless of whether a genocide is formally recognized. On the contrary, genocide denialism undermines the UK interest and damages its international reputation. By refusing to acknowledge credible determinations of genocide, Starmer risks weakening the UK's credibility and diminishing confidence in its commitment to upholding international treaties and obligations. It is not a surprise that both men have attempted to deny Israel's genocide of the Palestinians. Starmer and Lammy were both listed as parliamentary supporters of Labour Friends of Israel in its last publicly available list before the group deleted from their website shortly before the last election. Both Starmer and Lammy have also received significant funding from pro-Israeli lobbyists. Starmer says he supports Zionism without qualification, apparently meaning that no war crime committed by Zionists will ever make him waver in his support. But although these Labour Friends of Israel lawmakers are both trying to redefine the term genocide for the sole benefit of Israel, their personal opinions are irrelevant. The UK government has consistently confirmed that its long-standing position on acknowledging genocide is that it is for courts to determine and not government. Consequently, it matters little that Lammy or Starmer's personal views are on the genocide in Gaza or their denial of it. The UK's position has consistently been that the determination of genocide is a matter for the courts, not for political debate. The International Court of Justice has already established that there is a case for genocide in Gaza. Both the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary have a duty to the UK to accept the ICJ's findings and publicly acknowledge the genocide being committed by Israel in Gaza. Formal acknowledgement of the ICJ's ruling of genocide would have serious and immediate consequences for the UK's dealings with the Zionist regime. In the first instance, it would mean that in determining whether to grant export licenses of arms to Israel, the clear risk requirement of the export criteria is overwhelmingly met by the ICJ ruling. This is established in Criterion 2 of the export criteria, which does not require a finding of genocide to halt arms sales. Having assessed the recipient country's attitude toward relevant principles established by instruments of international humanitarian law, the government will not grant a license if it determines there is a clear risk that the items might be used to commit or facilitate a serious violation of international humanitarian law. This would mean all export licenses would have to be halted immediately, and that under domestic law, the UK would no longer be able to provide support to Israel in its commission of war crimes and genocide. Sections 52 to 55 of the International Criminal Court Act 2001 make it an offence to aid or abet the committing of genocide, war crimes, or crimes against humanity. This is, of course, including flying reconnaissance flights over Gaza or offering military assistance. Foreign Office civil servants are increasingly emboldened to speak out about Britain's growing complicity with Israel's war crimes, and with an expedited judicial review granted by the High Court over the UK's continued arms trade to Israel, it might well be that Keir Starmer ends up with no choice but to finally accept the ICJ's interim ruling that genocide is occurring in Gaza.
have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Welcome to this episode. We often think of charity as giving when we have extra. But the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his holy progeny, teaches us a different perspective. When asked about the best charity, he said, جُهْدٌ مِنْ مُقِلٍ إِلَى فَقِيرٍ فِي سِرٍ. The best charity is a sincere effort from someone with little given secretly to a poor person. So this hadith shifts our mindset about generosity. It's not about how much we give, but how and when we give. Let's explore why this is the highest form of charity. True generosity isn't measured by wealth, but by sacrifice. Given when you yourself are struggling shows the sincerity and deep faith. It means that you enjoy it. It doesn't matter if you don't have enough, if you don't have extra or you don't have enough. It shows that you enjoy the act itself, the act of giving, and you are becoming like don't get me wrong, you're becoming like God in his generosity, in his beneficence, in his compassion. He's Rahman, he's Rahim. So you try to be like your God. So a worker with limited income, for example, who still helps a struggling neighbor, reflects true generosity compared to a millionaire who gives from excess. So the Quran also has it, لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. You will never attain righteousness until you spend in charity from that which you love. So, and adding that charity should reach those in real distress, not just be for show, and it should be secret. Fi sir, it should be secret. It is better. It is the best way to, you know, to keep it secret. And we have a lot of verses in Quran in that regard, especially regarding the acts of a charity by Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam, who used to, as a habit, he used to give in secret. So charity should reach those in real distress. So identifying and discreetly supporting those in need makes the biggest impact. And we should protect the dignity of the recipient as well. Giving in secret purifies the giver's intention, ensuring it's for Allah, not for social praise, not for anyone else, just between you and God. And Allah says, "In tubdu sadaqat fani'imahi." If you disclose your charitable donations, they are good. But if you keep them secret and give them to the poor, it is better for you. So give even when it is difficult. It's not about amount, but sincerity. Keep charity private. Okay. So inshallah we do that. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, protesters throughout the U.S. and Europe have voiced a strong opposition to just about every move that Donald Trump has made since assuming the Oval Office for his second term as U.S. president. Now, in the U.S., demonstrators push back at the Trump administration's moves